Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Condensed Histories, the podcast that takes pop culture and reveals the real history underneath. I'm your host, Jim Deducciu, and what we're doing this time round is a Final Fantasy VII, including Final Fantasy VII Remake and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. These are very long names. Now, before I get too far into it, this is going to be one of these ones where I'm not going to go thousands of years back into the past, but instead use this sort of franchise in looking at the world or the relationship between video games and mainstream pop culture, because it is an interesting transformation that's happened over my lifetime. And I've got opinions on this, okay? Now, for full disclosure, if you're looking for, oh, where did this Final Fantasy series start, etc., a while ago, I did one on Final Fantasy 16, and I will mention that in a little bit more depth in a minute, so we'll get to that. But if you want the full background of it and what's going on here, please listen to the episode, which is all about Final Fantasy 16. So, let's go back to when I was a small child.
A long, long time ago.
I was little at the beginning of the 1980s, and even then, this flickering screen and a joystick that you could control what was on front of the TV or monitor in front of you, as a small child then, I recognised that as kind of magical. Indeed, in the 1980s, there was the rise and rise of the arcade, which had been around for decades and had largely been full of things like pinball machines and push-penny type machines and the claw and all that kind of stuff.
Claw is our master. Claw chooses who will go and who will stay.
Which still exists. Some of that stuff does still exist to this day. But more and more cabinets with video games were being brought in. The legendary ones like Space Invaders, Donkey Kong, Frogger, etc. And I was there and I loved it. I remember nagging my dad so he would give me a 10p so I could play it for a little while. And of course, the point of these video games at that point was not to make them good video games. Instead, they were to be brutally hard so that you would lose your lives quickly so that you then put in another 10p. But I kind of didn't care. The fact that I was being beaten to death by this video game, we talk about modern day video games being difficult, but they're nothing compared to the ones in the 1980s. How do you make a video game? Even once they came to home usage, how do you get it to last? These cartridges that most of these video games were on were very limited in their memory, and therefore there wasn't a lot they could show you. Forget about graphics for a moment, just how big could the maze be? How long could it go? And so the answer was, let's make it brutally hard, or let's make it so simple that it goes forever. The classic example of that is Pong, where all it is one bar on one side, one bar on the other side, and a square, it wasn't even a ball, a square of pixels just bouncing between the two. In essence, it's computerized tennis. And Pong was revolutionary. That came out in the 1970s. So the thing is, to understand this stuff, to be able to play this stuff at home, you'd either have to ask for a whole bunch of Christmas presents put together, or you had to earn some money from like a paper round or something. And therefore, it was quite a lonely, solitary thing. Now, I had lots of friends when I was a kid, and my friends also played video games. Well, a common misconception is that you were just sitting there on your own. Now, of course, you were at times sitting there on your own, getting better at these games, trying to get past the end of level, those sorts of things. But what would happen on a Saturday is you'd take turns. All your friends would turn up, and this went on into my 20s. Bunch of friends would turn up. We would take turns. We would get pizzas. We'd get crisps, chips, whatever you want to call them. And it was just a sociable evening. And of course, some of the games were like two-player, things like Street Fighter 2, etc. So you could have two people fighting at the same time. It was gloriously fun. And of course, nowadays, with digital entertainment and the internet, people are playing over the internet, etc. And I have seen my sons play that kind of way. Sometimes with their phone just on in a group chat, everyone sort of squealing at each other as they're playing various competitive games. Fine, good for you, have fun. But it's different to everybody being in the same room at the same time. But because of that, it was seen as uncool. It was seen as not aspirational. I really did do. So the story I've told on many times before, but just sort of fit it into this, is my teenage years were not hanging around on street corners. My teenage years were staying at home, because that's where the fun was, because I was either reading comic books, or I was playing video games, or I was collecting and painting and playing Warhammer. All those things involved being at home, and in the words of my mother, she had no problems with this whatsoever, because she said, I knew where you were, and I knew that you would stay out of trouble this way. True, all this is true. But none of this got you street cred. None of this was cool back in the 80s and on into the 90s. And what I find interesting is nowadays, I talk to various young people, and particularly the young women, that sort of, they've got opinions on, there's a number of extremely talented painters online who are women, or painters of Warhammer, and others talking about their favourite video games. And my eldest son's girlfriend, we started talking and comparing, contrasting video game stories. And it's like, there's a part of me thinking, why didn't this exist 25 years earlier? Why did I have to give up all this stuff? Because it was not considered mainstream. And this is something that's forgotten about today. We talk about all the different changes in society, and by and large, they're for the better. You know, we should be more inclusive, etc., etc. And this idea of inclusivity when it comes to video games and things like that, also great and kind of underrated as well, because I was bullied is perhaps too strong a word, but it simply wasn't the cool thing to do. And you might get shouted nerd at you, etc. And the problem with, and this is where I am getting to the Final Fantasy stuff, is with something like Pong, you could get anybody, even if they're in no way video game literate, to understand Pong. Move the bar up and down the screen to block the ball from going to the edge of your screen. It's like tennis. Everyone's there. Everyone's got it. But the vast majority of video games at that time were, in the modern parlance, very crunchy. Very rules heavy. The buttons, and most video games were done on some kind of home computing, the Commodore 64 being one of the most cool things that you could have in the mid-1980s. Towards the end, it was outgunned by the likes of the Amiga, and I had an Amiga, and I had the full brunt of 1 megabyte of memory. Whoa. Now, if you're not particularly into your computers, to put that into context, your average everyday video game today would be more like 80 gigabytes. So that is, a gigabyte is 1,000 megabytes. So that is 80,000 times more for a video game today than was standard back in 1989. I specifically remember I got my Amiga in 1989 with Ocean, that was the publisher that just doesn't exist anymore. Ocean's Batman from 1989. That was the hot game of 89. Everybody wanted that, except for any girls I tried to talk to. But that's a different story. So the point is, what I mean by crunchy is they're rules heavy. They're really impenetrable. With the likes of a home game station where you have like a joystick and two buttons, like an Atari, for example, that's easy enough for anybody to get on with. But if you're using a computer, it means, yes, there may be a joystick. Maybe you're lucky enough to have that. But also, it's like Q to go forwards. What are you talking about? Like various hot buttons to get to things. And you had all these role-play games which had rules upon rules upon rules. And there was no internet. How did you get the rules? Well, you'd sometimes get the rules or findings in loads of video game magazines. And there would be much talk about it in the playground. You could literally buy these magazines, and sometimes they would come with a really pulpy, really poor quality paper book on the front, which had cheat codes for loads and loads of video games, so you could get infinite money or infinite lives, and so you could finally get to the end of that particular video game. This stuff has all disappeared. Nowadays, video game companies monetize those cheats by you, in essence, have to pay to get them. And they're different for every single person, because nowadays you can have a unique code for each version of the thing. Even talking about version is a bit old-fashioned, because most people download their video games. Don't believe me? If you've got any video games on your phone, you downloaded them. They don't exist in a physical copy in any way. That company could take that video game away from you. I've had a number of great video games, or games, just call them games, on my phone, that because the company went bust or whatever, it meant to the point that they weren't supported with the new version of iOS, and so I lost them. And it's like, but I did pay for them, hours and hours and hours of fun with them, but why can't I keep them? That's the thing which a lot of people don't get. And if we're talking about crunchy video games, nothing gets crunchier than Final Fantasy. The reason why it was turn-based combat coming from Japan is because they did not have the processing power to have these people fighting and using all their rules and buffs and stats with the memory of the video game consoles. The Final Fantasy video games actually started in the 1980s, and I was completely unaware of them. Final Fantasy VII is the one that really took the West by storm. Now, people will turn around and say, yes, they are Japanese, Gem, and yes, Final Fantasies 1 through 6 are indeed initially Japanese, as are most of the Final Fantasy games. But, Gem, I think you'll find you could get them on the Sony SNES or whatever. It's like, yeah, great, good for you. You're even more nerdy than I was in the 1980s. I had no idea that these video games even existed until number 7 came out, because that's what most of the West did. And the thing is, the thing that changed the relationship between video games and the general population was the original Sony PlayStation. Sony was cool. Microsoft wasn't. Microsoft is what you did your homework on, or the accounts department of a business company would need Excel. Microsoft has never been a cool brand, but Sony, they gave you the Walkman, then the Discman. Sony started make movies. Sony was a cool brand. And then they decided to launch a video game console to compete with the likes of Nintendo. Both Sony and Nintendo are Japanese. And also compete against the likes of Microsoft and Sega and so on and so forth. And they came up with the PlayStation, which if you look at the original PlayStation today, you're going to go, oh, that's a lot of grey plastic. But at the time, it was seen as relatively modern, but its design itself, if you sort of squint and don't look at the colouring of it, and indeed you could later on get them in black, the circles and the lines and the fact that it's just one clear box, you just clip it into the TV and then you've got the controllers out the front, done. You don't need a degree in mechanical engineering to work out or electronic engineering to understand how to run this thing. You stick a disc in, you play it. And the video games themselves generally were more easily accessible. They were more arcadey, like the arcades that you had. So first of all, you needed to get PlayStations being installed everywhere. And there I was, as a young man in my 20s, with my flatmate, Kevin. Shout out to Kevin. And even though we were dating and going out to pubs and clubs and we had our own career, we were young men who, I was more into video games than Kevin was, but Kevin liked video games. He's a classic example of even the tough kids, the bullies back in the 80s, would still be able to attract them with an arcade machine. Their eyes would light up for Pac-Man or whatever. And so Kevin was more casual than myself, but we both understood that everybody was talking about PlayStation. And so we got one. And we started playing various different things. The thing we played absolutely to death was Ridge Racer. That was, oh, we had so much fun with that. But then there were adverts on TV for Final Fantasy VII, using only cutscene information, so you can't see the chunky graphics and how incredibly complicated this game was. It was just the cutscenes.
Beyond the edge of reality lies a story of ultimate conquest.
Which today don't look great, but if you compare the cutscenes to the actual graphics of the video game, or any video game at that time, it's like, wow, those were streets ahead. So that's what got people excited about it. The term's cinematic. And also, we knew that all PlayStation games came on one disc. What do you mean? This thing comes on three discs. People were excited about it. And it came out in Europe in 1997. And so I am not far off, actually, meeting my then-girlfriend, now-wife. So it does show you I was relatively late into my adulthood, or single adulthood, and I was still excited by video games. And when this thing came out, it was a sensation. It sold by the truckload. It only got 5-star reviews, and I started playing it. And I'd never played a game like it before. Now, it turned out it's an improvement on Final Fantasy VI, but I didn't even know that Final Fantasy VI had existed. And so playing this turn-based combat in this world, and you start in Midgar, and the other thing is, a lot of the role-play games, they were fantasy. This had a guy with a massive sword, and also was in a steampunk city. It was amazing. It was a steampunk city called Midgar. And I'm playing it and really enjoying it, and then there's this massive catastrophe that shatters Midgar, and then you realize that Midgar's just one city on two different continents, and you can start going across entire continents. It was mind-blowing that this was even capable in terms of computation of a video game. And so I went on this amazing 70-hour epic journey, which I just never experienced anything like this before. Yes, I played role-play games before, but maybe I was done with them after 10 hours, or maybe I'd got what I wanted out of them and didn't even bother finishing them after 20 hours. But like 70 hours and the world itself changing. There's another point where Cloud, the central hero, he sort of falls unconscious or into a coma or something. And then you start playing inside his mind. But then there are other things going out in the real world. And so somebody else takes over the group. But it's like, I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know that you could move from person to person. And then this is... This is a spoiler for something that is about 27 years old. And then there's this bad guy, Sephiroth. And just the music of the game was amazing and epic. And Sephiroth so evil and so terrifying. There's this marvelous bit early on where you get a flashback when Cloud had been working alongside Sephiroth. At one point, they were in the same organization. Cloud understands it's an evil organization. That's what triggers the beginning of the game. But you only find this out later on. A flashback. Flashback in a video game? But what's so clever is, at that time, when I was fighting, I managed my character up to something like level 10, and I was able to dish out 199 damage or 207 damage. That was kind of the amount of damage I was able to push out, and I knew it had taken me hours to get to that power. And this was a flashback with Sephiroth. And so Sephiroth's on your side and you're up against a dragon. It's like, oh my goodness, how am I going to beat this dragon? And then Sephiroth strikes it. The numbers always come up in Final Fantasy games. And in this occasion, it came up over 3,000. And then you realize, whoa, I am so underleveled compared to Sephiroth. It was a brilliant way of using the mechanics of the game to tell you without even saying anything, this is an incredibly powerful character. You're going to have difficulty facing him towards the end of the game. And it was just amazing. And then later on, I'm playing the game. My character's fallen for this girl called Aerith. And she's a lovely little flower girl. And she's the healer of the group. And Sephiroth finds her and kills her. So that's the big twist. And it's unlike a movie where it's like, oh my goodness, the heroes died. A movie lasts 2-3 hours. I'd been on a journey with Aerith for something like 35, 40 hours. And me and everybody else who didn't know that was coming, it was like, oh.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Oh my goodness, this is awful. And it made you hate Sephiroth so much more. It's like, how can you kill this sweet, innocent girl who I kind of had a crush on? And it's like, oh, this is a brilliant, brilliant bit of storytelling. Game making, it genuinely was a genre defining video game. Occasionally we get these popping up, and this is one of them. So I was so in love with Final Fantasy VII that I didn't realize that every Final Fantasy is different. So when it came to Final Fantasy VIII, it's like, I'm not sure I want to spend another 70 hours with a completely different group of people. And so I didn't actually start playing another one till 13. That was okay. I didn't even bother getting to the end of it. It's just, it wasn't as good. And then I played 16. Listen to that episode if you want to. But meanwhile, I'd always thought, and I was one of millions apparently, who were thinking, why can't we return back to Final Fantasy VII? Because we all love Barret and Tifa and Cloud and Red 13 and all these characters, etc. And we love the idea of Shinra. It's just a cool idea done really well. Some of the other ones, most notably Final Fantasy 13, had 2 spin-off video games. So I didn't really like the first one. It's like, well, there are 2 more games of this? Why can't we go back to 7? But clearly, Sony was thinking the same thing. So, it was announced round about 2017 that they were going to remake Final Fantasy 7 into possibly multiple games with modern-day graphics. And me and the whole internet of nerddom went nuts. When it finally came out, the first part, called Final Fantasy VII Remake, came out at the perfect time. It came out in April of 2020, when I had nothing to do, because the whole world had nothing to do. We were under lockdown at that point, and I just played that game, and I loved it. Critics and I would agree with it. There is a bit in the middle to get it to like 40 hours. There's a bit in the middle that just, it's like 10 hours too much in the middle too many times people are falling down ravines and they have to get refound, etc. But the whole 40 hours, they remix the story a little bit. They now introduce Sephiroth in a different way. And finally, the stuff that was alluded to in this very low quality video game from 1997 with the modern technology of a PlayStation 4, it blew everything away. We were sitting there amazed. Suddenly Midgar looked like the steel and concrete nightmare that we'd always had in the back of our minds. And Sephiroth's character and Cloud's character, the character figures were just much sharper, much bigger, much cooler, basically. And then it ended with the collapse of Midgar and the bit that I said at the beginning of my journey in the original Final Fantasy VII, that's where they finish it. And so it's like, that's a perfect place to end it. But of course, now I want to play the rest of Final Fantasy VII with all these new visuals and far more memory, so you can do so much more stuff. And they said, well, we are going to come up with something else soon. And then they did. But it just took a short 4 years till February of 2024. Finally, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth comes out. And this is the thing. I am talking to you now. I am about 10 and a half hours into it, and it's huge. Midgar is to the north, and obviously you can't go back there because it's destroyed. But already I've been on adventures and done various things, and now there's this huge open area which you can wander around. And the interesting thing is, comparing it to Final Fantasy 16, this is a major entry into the series. Final Fantasy 16 had a lot of love given to it. And again, for full details, listen to that episode. But it was very different. That turn-based combat, even with Final Fantasy VII, the remake, the first bit, it was part live action, but also you could slow down time to almost a crawl, so you can go into menus, cast spells, consume healing potions, all that stuff that you would want to do. But in the meantime, it is about dodging out the way of attacks, etc. Whereas with Final Fantasy XVI, you can't slow it down. It's all about the now. It's very Devil May Cry or Bayonetta, if you know those video games. If you don't worry about it. But it's a very different feel. And as a number of people said, and I would absolutely agree with them, by the time I got to the end of Final Fantasy 16, I just had enough. The reason why Devil May Cry and Bayonetta games are about 10 hours long rather than 50 hours long is, after a while, it doesn't matter how good that super action-y action is, after a while it gets a bit tedious and your fingers get sore, particularly after 50 hours of it, and I was done. Whereas with Final Fantasy VII, this new game, even though it's part two of a remake, I can't help but feel that it's more of a game than Final Fantasy XVI, which is a bit disappointing about Final Fantasy XVI. It's as time goes on, Final Fantasy XVI's looking worse. A few months after it, we get Baldur's Gate 3, and that shows you how a role-play game should really be. Now, you can say that then Final Fantasy VII, the new one's going to pale in comparison to Baldur's Gate 3. Well, yes, in the sense of the storytelling and the flexibility, but the visuals and the grandeur and the music's so good in the game. It's the whole thing holds together as, again, a classic game. Now, I am well aware I'm telling you all this through rose-tinted glasses because it's reminding me of a great game when I was in my youth and young adulthood. But there's no denying it's very, very skilled. I think the big thing I've noticed about this versus Final Fantasy 16 is, whereas 16 does have open areas, 7's open areas are bigger and there's more to do in them. And that's usually a sign that there's been more effort put into it. So, interesting. The other thing I can't tell from how well I'm doing with video games is I keep meeting these key stopping points in the story. Famously, and again to show you Sephiroth's power, there is a bit in Final Fantasy VII, the original one. You get out of Midgar, you then start traveling around, and there's this swamp that's stopping you going any further because there is this incredibly powerful snake in it. This giant rattlesnake thing, and it's so overpowered to where you are, and therefore what it's encouraging for you to go around, get leveled up and get ready to go back and finally fight it again. This is a clever bit of game design. However, when you do finally go back and you think you're ready to go, you see that this massive snake that caused you so much trouble just lying dead in a tree. It's sort of coiled round a tree. You then find out that Sephiroth has been there and just killed it. And you get that again in the Final Fantasy VII remake that I'm just doing, rebirth, I should say, that you have that fight again. I was waiting for that snake near the swamp. Indeed, I didn't even bother going near. I leveled up and leveled up. And eventually Sephiroth gets involved right at the end of the fight. But the thing about that snake is, by the time I beat it, my three party members were on 10% of their health or less. One of them was on 1 out of 1,100 health. And I'd used up all my health potions, all my revive potions. I was absolutely wheezing. I don't know whether the game deliberately lets you wear everything down. And then Sephiroth comes in, so you feel like you've just beaten it by the skin of your teeth. Or whether I got lucky. And because I played enough of these games and even played things like Elden Ring, I know how to manage my resources and push on through. Know when to attack, know when to hold back and heal. So I don't know. If anybody else is listening to this, let me know. I don't know. It feels like most people will get through first time by the skin of their teeth. But if anybody did have difficulty with it, I'd be fascinated to know about that. And the solution is level up. Just try to help him. Consider it a public service. The interesting thing, and I've kind of wrapped in the history with the story behind this, but you've got a video game that when the original Final Fantasy came out, it was a phenomenon, and yet it was set against a background where video games are for loser teenage boys who should do other things, go out and get some exercise, that kind of argument. That would have been 1997. Whereas today, when video games are just absolutely standard, kids play it, boys, girls play it, grown men, women play it, great, good for you, have fun, enjoy. But even though it's more acceptable, and even though it's been a while since we've had a video game quite like this, it hasn't caused a stir. It hasn't been advertised on TV again. It doesn't have the same cultural touchstone, these new versions, which the amount of love, energy, and effort. These are not cheap remakes or optimized for the PS5 but still using the PS1 version. Absolutely not. Instead, what we've got is there's this glut nowadays. What do you want to talk about? Where do you want to go? There's this fragmentation of culture, of pop culture, that I find this bit fascinating, because going back to when I was a kid in the 1980s, we all watched the same stuff on TV. There weren't that many channels. And when it came to video games, there would be a video game release, a few important ones every month, and that's it. And there weren't loads of them happening. The other thing about it is there was also more experimentation in those times as well. Like I said, with Final Fantasy VII, it broke every rule I thought existed, proving that those weren't rules in the first place. The other thing I love, and this shows really my age, is if you had, I mentioned earlier, the Commodore 64, this was a step up in terms of storing of data. How was the data stored? In audio cassettes. So these are magnetic strips. This is how you would listen to music, but also you could record anything onto it. And so what it was doing is it was hissing and burring. I'm really hoping that Greg can somehow get the sound of computer programming from the 1980s. The hisses and whirs, and basically these up and down, these shrieks almost down the telephone line, which I'll come to in a moment, are in essence ones and zeros. And it would be enough to create a few kilobytes worth of detail, and then you could download a game. So literally a game was on a cassette. That same cassette you could stick into your Sony Walkman and it would play. And this led to telephone, radio, and also even records being used to store or to spread programs, video games. There were some radio stations that would just play out this unlistenable noise, but if you recorded it and put it into a Commodore 64, you'd suddenly get a game. I remember as a kid watching something called the Wide Awake Club on Saturday mornings on ITV. It was from 7 o'clock till 9 o'clock. I'm making those numbers up, but it's probably about those times. And the idea was, you know, your parents are in bed and don't want to be interrupted. Kids go downstairs, watch cartoons. And so people in a studio would link together various Saturday morning cartoons. But on one occasion, they actually had a situation where they went, right, we're going to try this thing with computers. And over the TV, they played that hissing and popping noise. And people were, you were given time to record it, and they asked, what did you find? And the next week, people would write in, because it's before internet, people wrote in and said, we got a page of the Wide Awake Club logo. It's like, yeah, that's what we were trying to do. So you could literally dial up some services, and then you could literally get it down the telephone line. You could, there's sometimes on the front of these magazines, there would be a cassette, a free game, or a 7-inch single, flexible, rather made out of vinyl so it wouldn't be destroyed through the post. And you could play that, and again, you could record the noise off that record, and then you'd be able to make a video game. Now, the thing is, this was all very, very twitchy. If you didn't quite get all the recording, if there was any noise interference and disturbance into it, it would be pointless. And the other thing it's worth pointing out is this hissing and whirring would go on for 10 minutes for a video game, maybe 20 minutes. So the thing is, it was an incredibly analog way to spread digital information. Looking back on it, it's remarkable, and there isn't any equivalent today. Yes, of course, you can download at the tap of your screen an amazing video game that would have blown anything from 1987 out of the water. But that's not the point. The point is, this is all controlled. And the closest thing you can get, which is really useful and something that we would have loved back in the day, is because Final Fantasy VII has so many different facets to it, there are a couple of times I found some of the puzzles difficult to do, particularly sneaking up on chocobos, which are giant chickens. Think of a cross between a chicken and an ostrich, so you can ride on it, and they're a thing that are in every single Final Fantasy. So whereas the world is completely different between number 7 and number 16, it's interesting that in both of them, you can be riding on a chocobo. In 7, you have to catch them, first of all, and I found it particularly difficult on one occasion in the first 10 hours, and I'm sure I'll find it harder in the next 30 hours or whatever. I've heard that to play the actual story takes about 40 hours. But then if you want to do everything, it's going to be more like 100 plus. And I'm only on chapter 4, just at the start of chapter 4 of, I suspect, about 20. So I'm nowhere near anything in terms of the story. But here I am running around trying to do all the stuff out in the countryside and wilderness. So back to the chocobos. Yeah, they're a thing that are in all of them, same thing with like Ifrit, same thing with the materia. So there are certain things, themes transfer through the Final Fantasies, but characters, locations, not so much, no. And I'm loving this. The problem with the modern video game world is there's too many games of service. I'm pleased to say these seem to be fading away. Things like Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League also came out in 2024. This is a games of service, so you are hitting things for numbers, but at the same time, you're just doing the same story over and over again because you want to get plus one purple trousers as opposed to the trousers you got right now. And it's online, and it's seasons, and then you pay for the seasons and pay for more content, even though it's the same game. And while that was interesting 7-8 years ago for a few games, because it's this idea of like, oh, I can keep getting more money out of the same game, lots of the publishers have invested in that, not so much. All the free to play, and then they're just constantly trying to get money out of you. These do seem to be dying a death. Now, that's not to say that something like Fortnite will still be around, because Fortnite's so well established, and it also knows its market, which is largely 10-year-olds and not 30-year-olds. And there is now, with the likes of Baldur's Gate 3 and Final Fantasy 7, it's showing you that there is actually an appetite by older people who are willing to pay top dollar for a premium AAA experience. And so please, Video game manufacturers, pay attention to this. We want stuff like this and not just cheap cash grabs. We're expecting us to have a second job just so we can pay you to do this pointless grinding. It's not a very good game in the case of most of these games and services. So in some way it's innovative, in some way it's old-fashioned because it's reminding everybody, hey, look, people want a video game with a beginning, middle, and end, and where they themselves are the hero. It doesn't all have to be online multiplayer. And therefore, it is another classic, but it's interesting to me that it hasn't got the same general cachet. It'll be interesting to see behind the scenes how much this episode does compared to other episodes. I don't think it'll be our biggest listened to episode in 2024, and yet, if podcasts existed in 1997 and this was like, hey, we're talking about Final Fantasy VII, it would absolutely be the biggest one of the year. There we go. It shows you, even the case of the story, this one game in a group of many of them, you know, the actual story of the Final Fantasy franchise is over 40 years old. The story of this game is nearly 30 years old, and yet it's had various spin-offs and etc. around it. It's so interesting to me how these things sometimes take on a life of their own. And meanwhile, what Square Enix, who actually created the Final Fantasy games, they were just busy working on Final Fantasy VIII, which is also a very fine video game, by all accounts. I haven't played it, but at the same time, it is interesting to me that they've gone back to this one because this is clearly the one that has so much love, because it's the one that introduced Europe to their company and their franchise. Hope you enjoyed this one. Please click subscribe. Please give us a review. Tell another human being about us. Really appreciate that. And as always, another episode coming soon.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.